Consequences are essential when someone refuses to take responsibility. I saw that on a Henry Cloud. I don't know if you know him, but Henry Cloud wrote different books on boundaries, and I think one of his that people I keep hearing people recommend is the original Boundaries, but he's also written other books, Boundaries with Children, etc., etc. And I've never read it because, and I probably will. But the reason why I haven't read it is because when I heard about it, and the first time I heard about it was actually from Sarah Jakes Roberts. And she was talking about that when she used to do the podcasts live. When it was just her. So that was probably a couple of years ago. that she had mentioned it. And that's the first time I had heard about it. And I did look it up. And I think since then, it was, I think, just one book. I think that was like 3 years ago. And there was just one book at that time. Maybe, I don't know. But I know that he has written different books. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that I downloaded the Boundaries with Children one, or I put it in my wish list, something like that. But because I wanted to, I'm always interested in certain topics, and so. But I likely will read that book at some point, and it may be a book that I actually read versus listen to, maybe. But I like that I saw. I just came across it because I want to talk about consequences. That same quote, consequences are essential when someone refuses to take responsibility. But that sentence will usually be interpreted that the consequences are for the other person. And I want to talk about when those consequences are essential for you. Not the person that refuses to take responsibility, but you, the person who is trying to get someone else or wants somebody else to take responsibility for their actions. I recently had an opportunity, again, to adjust one certain point in my life that this touched upon. Because when we are in relationship or when we are whether we are working with or engaging with, even if it's not a continual engagement or with someone else, we also have responsibility. And there may be times when we are doing our actual responsibility and the other persons are not, or because we are doing our responsibility, we may be doing our responsibility a bit too much. And so the person on the other side of the relationship, the encounter, whatever, doesn't take up their slack of the responsibility that they're supposed to take up. So it's like if you are helping lift a heavy load and you are taking up or holding more weight, and the other person that's also supposed to be carrying it isn't. I mean, they're holding it, but they're not holding much weight. You're pretty much holding the weight, and maybe because, you know, you usually take on more than you, you know, there are different capacities, and some people take on more than other people do, and it's nothing that is wrong or right about it. It's just difference of capacity. Like, some people can tolerate a lot of pain, whereas somebody else, you know, stubs their toe and they're like, oh my God. You know, you'll see that a lot of times when you'll see these things on social media and stuff, when they'll show these, they'll do these little skits, I call them, where the dad gets sick You know, the family has kids and they'll show the dad getting sick and they'll show the mom getting sick. When the dad gets sick, they'll show that he's in bed. He wants the wife to take care of him. He's barely doing anything. He's not doing nothing because he all laid up in the bed, you know, you know, type of a thing. And then you show when the mom is sick. The mom's still cleaning the house, still cooking, still washing the dishes, still, you know, doing everything because that is what mothers do. So that's what I mean. So if the dad had to hold that type of responsibility, he probably wouldn't be laying in the bed like that. But the moms tend to hold the lion's share of responsibility when it comes to kids. And that's not always the case. But it still usually is, where you'll see, you know, the mother taking the lion's share of responsibility. Not that the father can't take on more responsibility, just that's what, you know, mothers tend to do. They, you know, they tend to take more responsibility, you know, for the household, for their kids, etc. And so even though the father can take on more weight, she's taking on all that weight, so he just lets her. So that's why when he's sick, he can be laying in the bed like that. And in addition to everything else that she's doing, wants her to take care of him. So that's two examples of what I'm talking about. And I have been having an issue in a certain area for the past probably, wow, I would say probably for the past, wow, now I'm trying to think. When did it start? I think it was 5 years ago it started. Yeah, 5 years ago. And it wasn't that much of an issue as much as it had become in the past couple years in particular. And so there would be different points in time where it would just get to be like, okay, I need to change this dynamic. It's in relation to someone else. And it's like, you know, I need to change this dynamic because it is, you know, pulling too much from me. And sometimes you have relationships like that where, especially if you're in a certain, you know, time in your life where, you know, more is required of you personally, you know, in areas, it could be, you know, for your family life, if you have young kids, it could be, you know, if you're, you know, taking care of a elderly parent, or, you know, maybe someone in your, you know, nuclear family is going through an illness or something, or a health challenge. And so that is pulling from you. And so everything else externally, you have to, it's too much. It's too much. And so basically, that is the flow of how things, you know, have been. And I realized it. And I, at different points, would make adjustments so that I can really step back, because I'm the type of person that I'm a problem solver. If there is a problem or an issue, it's like, okay, how can we solve this? Oh, here's a solution. Here, look at this. And because I'm that type of person, what ended up happening is the person on the other end of this is not that type of person. And so, you know, you have sometimes people that are leaders and you have people that, you know, are followers, for lack of a better word, where they'll let somebody else take the lead, you know, so they don't have to. It's like, you know, they prefer for somebody to tell them what to do. And okay, this is what I should do. Okay, let me go and do that, or give them a direction rather than them take their own direction. And I am the latter, where I take my own direction. I do not like people telling me what to do. I make my own decisions. I actually, you know, you'll see a lot of people may be like, oh, okay, I have to make this decision. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? I don't do any of that. You know, I love to do research and see how I feel about things and make my own decision based on, you know, myself and who and what is attached to me. And I enjoy doing that. And so that's the type of person that I am. And so what ended up happening is I also have found myself in relationships with people. And I don't mean like relationship, like romantic. I just mean in general. I seem to have found, because I guess that is my tendency to jump in and want to help. And I am also a, what you would call a project manager. So it's like, okay, here are the steps. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, let's do this first, that, and that. So I'm just that type of person. And I actually love doing that type of stuff. And my goal in it has always been, okay, you are coming across an issue. All right, let me, you know, here's what we can do. And here's how I can help you. And my goal at the end of all of that is for the person to be able to stand on their own. Like if you have somebody that, you know, have a cast off and they need to, you know, walk to get motion back and everything like that, and to be fully functional, to walk and run and be able to go up and down the stairs. But at first you don't expect that of them. You help them along. So that they can strengthen, and then you can step away and they can start to walk on their own as they continue to strengthen themselves. But I have seemed to find myself in a couple of encounters with people where instead of it being like, okay, I'm going to, you know, take your help, and then I'm going to, you know, continue to practice, I'm going to continue to work at it so that I can step off on my own, I seem to have had encounters with people who it's like, oh, you're helping? Okay, then I can just lean on you to do this. And even though, you know, I would give them the tools to be able to help themselves, you know, I guess the motivation isn't there or whatever. And so it doesn't happen. And then what ends up happening is I continue, you know, to help and to give additional tools or, you know, resources and stuff like that to be able to, you know, to help. And they may, you know, take it for a little bit, but not really all the way. And then you find yourself in a situation, or I found myself in a situation where it's like, okay, this has been happening for years and you're still in the same place. And this is not where I want to be. I mean, like if you're helping somebody build a business, like, okay, like a consultant, the consultant is not there to work with your business, you know, and, you know, all the way through. The consultant is there to give you advice, to give you tools, to give you resources, to give you their professional opinion and a strategy on how you can build and grow. And then it's up to you, the business owner, to implement it and take that assistance to be able to grow and continue. And then the consultant is only there for a period of time. And then once that period is done, they move on to do the same thing for another business. They are not meant to be there forever. And they may come in if you need them at another point to give assistance or to, you know, take in what's going on and to give a guidance and strategy as to something else, then they will do that. But once again, it's for a period of time, not a long-term or permanent thing or continual thing. And so that is how I view things. And so the first time I found myself in something like that was it actually in I guess you would call it a romantic relationship. And I would, you know, help and, you know, give, you know, resources of time, etc., to help. And then, you know, and then I would realize that the same situation just kept happening over and over again. And sometimes the help that I would give was like, it was like it was a given versus, okay, I see that. Okay, let me take the reins and go from here. And so it's like you have, like, have you ever seen those whales and then they have these fish clinging on them? That's what it kind of was like. It's like the whale is going and the whale is moving and the whale is bigger. So, you know, the whale swishes tail. A whale can probably, you know, do a mile just in a couple swishes of the tail. And so these fish will, you know, cling on to the whale and get a free ride. And probably also food, you know, the whale eats and they'll get, you know, any, you know, little bit of food that comes from the whale's mouth and everything like that. I think you see it with sharks too. And that's how they live. They don't have any intention of, so they're like a parasite, and the whale is the host. And you'll find that in different things in nature as well. So that's what it felt like, because I'm like, I'm doing this so that you can step off, like, but you're still clinging to me. And I don't see you doing things to kind of put yourself in a better situation. Like, I don't see any growth. I don't see any progress. And that's a problem, because as like a consultant, I'm only intend to be here in this capacity for a little bit of time. I'll dedicate this amount of time and then I move on. But it doesn't seem like the memo was gotten. And so that's the first time I found myself in that. And that situation lasted years. And, you know, and then I realized, wait a minute. Because what has happened is the person had gotten laid off, and then I got laid off as well, like some months later. So I look back, and that situation was like almost a decade, you know, and that's not all that was happening. You know, you have company, you hang out and stuff like that. But I stopped and said to myself, wait a minute. During this whole period of time, when I got laid off, I filed for unemployment, and then I got a part-time job cashiering at a supermarket. And then I, you know, went to work for someone for a little bit part-time, and I actually started my own business, and a couple different aspects, well, maybe two or three different aspects of my own business, and until realizing, yeah, I don't want to do that, but this part I'll do, or whatever. And so this has been going on during that decade of time. And I'm realizing, wait a minute, so I've done these different things, you know, moving forward. And this person is in the same exact place, that they have been in at the beginning of this point in time, and hasn't moved emotionally, mentally, anything, hasn't moved. And so I decided, you know what, I'm going to offer another level of help and see what happens. But that's going to be the last thing, because I really wanted to see them get on their feet. And so I did that. I offered it, and they took the help and did not use it in that manner. They still sat there. It's like somebody saying, like, let's talk about, you know, the man at the waters, you know, in the Bible, the man at the waters, and, you know, Jesus asked him if he, you know, wanted to be, you know, well, and he said that when the angel stirs the water, there's no one to help him get into the pool, and somebody always gets there first. And he's been sitting there, I think, for like 38 years or something like that. And so you say to yourself, you've been sitting there for 38 years. So that means you should kind of recognize when the angel get ready to stir the water or something, and roll yourself. If you can't walk, you roll yourself real quick, you know, strengthen your arms so you can drag yourself into that water real quick, you know, be right there at the edge. So as soon as you start to see something happening, boom, you're right there. I mean, some strategy should have happened during that time. And so it's like somebody like that has been given like a car to get to the water. And then the angel stirs the water and that person ain't in the car ready to go. They still on the side of the thing. They see the angel stirring the water, and then they're like, oh, let me now get ready to do it, instead of saying like, okay, let me make sure everything's cool. I'm going to sit here in the car, so as soon as the angel stirs the water, boom, we ready to go. And I make sure I have the gas in the car. The car has been, you know, maintenance. Everything's going good, so we just, boom, go. They've been letting the car sit there. They don't know if the car, they've been using the car for other things, to, you know, do this, that, or the other, go cross the street, you know, on and gamble or whatever, instead of using the car for the intents and purposes of which it was given, which is to help you to get to the water right there where the angel has stirred it. That's what ended up happening in my case. I actually had an extra vehicle, and I gave it to the I loaned it to the person and said, okay, here you go, because I was going to sell it. And I said, well, I'll hold off on selling it. You can take this so that you can, you know, have more a wider girth of being able to find a job and get to the job and get to interview, so you don't have to, you know, you can expand your horizons with that, as far as instead of looking for a job immediately around you or have to catch the bus or whatever, you can look for a job like up to 2 hours away because there's a vehicle. And once you get the job, you can either buy the vehicle from me, or you can save your money, you know, and then you can get your own vehicle. And, you know, within the, you know, first, you know, a few months or whatever, and like get your own vehicle, you can put a, you know, down payment on or something, and then you can give me back my vehicle and I will sell it. And then I would ask them, because I'm like, that's the purpose for which I'm loaning you this vehicle versus selling it and, you know, getting money for it. And so, and I said, I gave some stipulations that, you know, this is the only reason that this vehicle should be used. I was very specific on that. And these are, you know, the person smoked, so I said, I don't want any smoking in my vehicle. And you need to keep it clean. You need to keep, you know, make sure the oil is good and everything like that. And put gas in it, of course. And so then I would check in on them and be like, okay, so have you had any interviews? Have, you know, and they would get annoyed at me asking this. I'm like, well, I gave you this vehicle and I gave it to you for a portion of time. This isn't a forever thing. I gave it to you so that, you know, and I reiterated the reasons for which I gave them the vehicle. So yes, I'm going to check in because I want to make sure that the vehicle is being used in that manner. And as I said, this is for a short period of time, not for a, like, just indefinite period of time. And so absolutely, I'm going to be checking in because this is an investment that I'm making. And I am absolutely going to check in on my investment. And so they would get agitated about me asking, not want to answer. And then I would go to, you know, check on the vehicle, and I would see, you know, the ashes, you know, from a cigarette smoke. And I'm like, didn't I tell you I don't want any smoking in this vehicle? And it was dirty. I'm like, why is it dirty? I didn't give it to you like this. And then I found out that they were taking the vehicle and, you know, picking up, you know, one of their family members from work. I'm like, dude, I did not give you this vehicle for that purpose. I gave it to you for one purpose. So if you're not using it for that purpose, it should be sitting, because I am planning to sell this vehicle. And that means I don't want it being run here, there, and everywhere. This is the only purpose for which reason. They're getting agitated saying, well, you know, if they have it, why shouldn't they be able to use it for whatever? I'm like, that's not why I gave it to you. So what eventually ended up happening is then they didn't keep the oil up on it. I went and I checked the oil, because for some reason that vehicle always ran through oil, and I would check it and it barely had any oil. And I'm like, didn't I tell you and actually show you how to check the oil on this thing to make sure that was a stipulation, and you didn't do that either. So what ended up happening is I took back the vehicle, because I'm like, you're not using it for the purposes that I gave it to you to use. You're getting very defensive when I ask you about, you know, if you're making progress on different things. And the reason why I was asking is because I knew the pattern of the person. And this was my last ditch effort to help them. You say that, you know, you aren't able to find work or whatever like that. Okay, well, here's a vehicle. So this should, you know, help alleviate that, because now this expands your borders that you can find a job. And so, but that didn't happen. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to take the vehicle back then. And so I did. And then they made a comment to me. And I was like the comment smacked of, have you ever helped somebody so much that it becomes something where it's like they are owed something? And that's how this person came. And I'm like, you know what? That is wow. And I was like so flabbergasted about it, because I'm like, I don't think that way. Like, when I came to the States, I thought I had some place to stay, and it turns out that I didn't. And so a family friend that I had known from a child, you know, was in not too far from where I was, and they said that I can stay with them. And so I went there and I said to myself, okay, they're letting me stay here. It was me and my cat. And I'm like, they're letting me stay here. I'm going to make sure that I work. And I did. I got two jobs. One was cashiering at a supermarket, and the other was working at if you're in the States, they have Sheetz or they have Wawa type of thing, where basically it's a gas station that also has and it's not a convenience store. It's more than a convenience store. Like, they actually cook food and everything. They have breakfast, they have lunch, they have these, you know, food bowls and everything like that. So it's, you know, that type of stuff. And I worked at one of those overnight so that I can save my money and I can, you know, leave. And I was so grateful for that opportunity. I made myself very small in the home. I bought my own food. I didn't touch their food. I made sure that I used the bathroom when, you know, because there were children in the home. And so the person would get ready for work and the children would get ready for school. And I made sure that I waited until they were finished and they left. And then I would go and take a shower and do what I needed to do, so I wouldn't be taking up space, you know, within their normal family flow and everything like that. And I made myself very small. And then as soon as I had enough money to leave, I left. And I made sure I cleaned up my entire area and everything like that before I left. And so that's my mindset. Like, you are offering this to me. I'm going to use it as a stepping stone, and I'm going to get out of your hair as quickly as possible so that I can stand on my own, because that is my intention. Not to be sitting here, you know, watching TV, doing this, that, and taking forever. No. You have opened up this opportunity for me. I'm going to take it as the opportunity that it is. Thank you very much. I'm going to utilize as little of your resource as possible, and I'm going to use that as an opportunity to build my own resources and step out and be out on my own, which was my intention, independence. So that's what I did. This same situation that I'm talking about that the person did for me, I wanted to do for somebody else. I was so grateful for that, because that was actually a driving force in me doing this for this person. So, and then I found myself in another situation like that. And I'm like, you need to stop trying to help people, unless people really want to help themselves, you know? And then I think, you know, sometimes you see a lot of potential in someone and that they can do things, and maybe they need a little help or somebody to stand beside them to do it, and they can do it. And that is true. But what I learned from that first situation and the situation that I recently disengaged myself from was that you cannot make anybody do anything. And somebody can have all the potential in the world, and if they don't have the grit, if they don't have the drive to do it, then it won't happen. Because if somebody can do something only because you are standing beside them, holding them up, unless you plan to be that, like, forever, then you need to, like, that's not really helping. Because, especially if you're dealing with adults, even when you're dealing with kids, I do the same thing with my kids. I'm like, you know, the other day my daughter was having an issue with her math, and I'm like, and she just kept coming back with the same wrong thing. I could tell she's just doing ridiculous stuff at this point. She's not even going through the steps that I had already showed her and everything. And I said, okay, look, it seems, because then I told her a hint, and then she went and she did the hint, but then everything else was still guesswork. Like, she's just going there and just doing whatever, not even looking at the problem and say, okay, this is what I need to do, asking herself the questions that I tell her she needs to ask. And, you know, because I gave her a whole process, I typed it out and everything for her. She has it on her desk. And I said to her, I'm like, okay, it seems like you are looking for me to tell you every step, and I'm not going to do that. So I'm going to tell you what, we're about to be done here. And either you go and look at the paper, because I've already showed you how to do this. You've been doing this for like over a year now. You know what to do. And if you don't remember, I've written the process down so that you can find your way back to the path to getting the correct answer. And I can tell that you're not doing what it is that I showed you, and you're not looking at the paper, even though I told her. Every time she came back, I said, look at the paper. And then I said, are you looking? Did you read the paper? No. Why are you not reading the paper? Because I told you every time you came back that you should go and look at the paper. And I said, this is the last time we're doing this today. And then you're just going to, you know, go to bed early. So either you choose to use your thinking brain and do as I taught you to do. And if you don't remember, to look at the paper, because that has the strategy for you to get the correct answer and do what you know, or we're going to be done for today. The next time she came back, you can see that she had done what she was supposed to do. And that's what I mean. It's like, either we're not going to be sitting here all day, so I do it with my kids. I'm not going to tell you, okay, do this, then do that. I don't need to, because I've already taught you how to do this. This is not something new. We've been doing it. You've been doing this for a couple of years now. This is not something new. Actually, this is something very simple for you. So, and not only that, but I've also given you the tools, because, you know, she does have, I mean, she is on the spectrum, and I know she has ADD as well. So along with that comes memory situations. And sometimes they know how to do something, but that they can't, that went into another compartment. Like sometimes you put something in your house, not where the designated spot is, and you put it somewhere else, and now you can't find it because you didn't put it in the designated spot so that you can retrieve it. That's what that was like. That's what it's like. It's like the information is somewhere in their brain, but they cannot retrieve it at that moment. And try as they might, it just ain't happening. It is really interesting. And so that's why I put everything. I mean, I'm talking this, do this. This, if this is this, then go this path. If not, then go. I mean, there's... You know, it mapped it all out so she can find her way back. And so that's what I mean. And so I also have to take responsibility. And we also, as the person who wants to change and try to disengage themselves to something that can be kind of a toxic situation. And not toxic like, you know, like abusive or anything. Just toxic in, you know, mentally or emotionally. When it involves another person. And I found myself in that situation. It was toxic because the patterns kept happening and I kept getting, it's like somebody going in a pool and they keep going into the deep end and they can't swim and they don't have no floaties on. But yet they keep jumping into the deep end. And then they can't touch the bottom because they're 4 feet tall and the deep end is 8 feet. And so they're, you know, sputtering, trying to, and then you go in and you, you know, pull them out. And because they can't swim, they can't touch the bottom, they start pulling on you now. And every time you jump in there and you tell them, don't go in that part, go in the shallow part. But yet they may do that, but then they go back to the deep part again. And there you are jumping in again to help them. And so you find yourself in that continued dynamic, and it's like they know that you're going to jump in and help them. So they're not really concerned. Like, oh, I shouldn't jump in here. They may think, oh, well, maybe, you know, I've grown, or maybe I can handle it now. And so they jump in, and then they know that you're there and that you're going to come help them. And so this dynamic keeps happening, and that's what was happening. And so I have been trying different things to break that dynamic. And I would try different things, and they would work up to a point. But ultimately, we would find ourselves back in that same situation. And for the other person, it's not an issue because, like, for instance, as I said, they know that you're going to jump in and help them. So they know that somebody's going to be there for them. But for me, as the person, I don't want you leaning on me like that. Because if you can't handle the deep end, you shouldn't go in the deep end. Or you should either have a flotation device with you so that if you get too far in the deep end, that you can get yourself back to the shallow end where you can actually stand. Or maybe you should stay in the shallow end. Maybe you can't handle the deep end, and you should be okay with that. Because not everybody can handle this everything. And you may want to handle the deep end. And you know what? Maybe you may never be able to handle the deep end. Be at peace with that. Maybe you can handle the middle. Maybe you don't always need to be in a shallow, but you can handle the middle. Be okay with what your capacity is. Unless you're willing to put the work in to be like, you know what? I'm going to build my capacity so that I can handle that deep end. But understand that that comes with work, that comes with grit, that comes with, especially if you don't have the natural capacity to handle the deep end, that comes with a lot of stuff. Because I think people see somebody that can handle a lot and do a lot and think that, oh, they just were born like that. Not necessarily. I mean, to a point necessarily, yes. But to another point, they don't realize what it takes to maintain that. They don't realize what it takes to walk in that. It's not like, oh, this just happened. No, it didn't just happen. I actually was listening to Stephen Furtick on his message last Sunday, and he was talking about how people see somebody and they'll say, oh, this person just blew up on social media or whatever, or their business just blew up, or, you know, whatever. And it's like, no, it didn't. That took a lot of grit. That took a lot of dedication, that took a lot of, you know, missed steps or failures for them to get to that point that you didn't see. Because all you saw is that, oh, all of a sudden now they're blowing up and they have all these views and all that. You didn't see the work that it took, the dedication that it took, that all before that to lead up to that point. And people don't see that when they look at somebody that does a lot or can do a lot or has a large capacity of things, that it took a lot for them to build that capacity. Just like if somebody can lift, you know, 500 pounds, you think they just like, oh, let me go lift the 500 pounds. No, it took years for them to get there. They had to build their muscles to be able to do it. And they had to build up to that point. They maybe started at 50 pounds and then they build from there and kept going and kept going. And not only that, but they need to sustain their bodies, their health. They need to eat right so that their bodies are conditioned so that they can do that. There's a lot that goes into that, but you don't see none of that. And so that's a problem that I think that you know, people just think like, oh, you're just doing it and oh, you can do it. So you can do this too. And, you know, type of a thing. And even though you may communicate to people that, hey, look, it's like, I don't know if people aren't listening or if they aren't understanding or what. And you try to be like, I don't want to be hurting people's feelings and stuff like that. But you try to say it gently that, okay, look, this is the deal. And I, because I have done that, well, no, I didn't do it at first. Yes, I did. I did it at different points, but then we would end up back in the same place again because something would happen. I would step in to try to help. But then I realized once, like the first time, like this has been like a long time. Interestingly, about a decade as well. It's like, what is wrong with me? You know, and Mike, it's like, I don't want to be in this position. And I had to ask that of another person. It's like, you didn't even ask me if I wanted to do this. You assume that, oh, she can do it. And so you just keep doing it or keep asking this of me. Not even you, but you never even asked me initially, is this something that you're okay with? Is this something that you want to do? And it was a comment that they made that smacked of, they had no idea what my life is. And that's fine. But my problem was the assumption. I don't assume anything of anyone because I don't know what they're doing. I'll ask, can you? Do you mind? Type of a thing. And I have learned to ask, okay, that I need to also ask time frame. Like, okay, what time frame can you do this in? Because if you can't do it in that time frame and I need it in a certain time frame, then I'll go another thing. I'm still practicing or needed to be mindful about that part. So I'm still practicing that in certain arenas. So I said that to the person and I put the boundaries out. The boundaries. Sometimes you want to put boundaries and you do. And you're very clear about the boundaries. But for some reason, the person that you have given the boundaries to is not paying attention and still doing their own thing. And so you end up having to put even more stringent boundaries in play because I have said to you and I've explained to you that this is what I need and this is why. And you seem to still just be doing whatever you want. And I have found myself needing to do that this year with a couple of people and not be concerned about their feelings about it, because you say it nice the first time and the boundaries are soft boundaries because you want them to catch what it is that you're, you know, communicating, but they don't. And so then you need to put stricter boundaries in place. And I had to ask myself in the second situation, because that first time I said, what you need to do from this point on is you need to ask me first. Because I haven't said anything but up to this point. But the comment that you just made, making it seem like this is just something that, oh, it's just a given. You should, no. You've never even asked me if it's something that I want to do or if it's something that I can do. You assume that is something that I can do, and you probably didn't even think if it's something that I want to do, because you assume that is something that I just can do, so therefore it's fine for you to just keep putting me in this position. And no, it's not. So I'm going to be very clear, it's not fine. And now we're going to take this another direction. You need to confer with me first to ascertain my permission as to whether or not I can or want to do it at that point in time. That's what we're going to do now. Because a lot of times too, you have to look at what are you doing to encourage this behavior or this dynamic. And I'm like, how do I keep, because I also said, how do I keep ending up back in this situation? Because I found myself back to that breaking point again. That always comes. And what ended up happening too is I found myself being more agitated about the patterns that just kept happening. It's like being on a merry-go-round, and at this certain part in the merry-go-round, it does, you know, this shock thing happens and you are annoyed by it and it keeps happening. But, you know, you're like, you don't stop and say, why am I getting shocked at this very point? And I'm still on this merry-go-round. I'm like, we're here again. But and I keep remembering the different boundaries that I put in place. And actually, I had stopped and said to the person, because I'm very much about communicating to people, look, this is a situation. This is how I feel about it. I can't do this, or we need to do this a different way. I'm not going to do this way. If we're going to be doing this, this is how this has to happen, because this is what I need. And if that doesn't work for you, then that's fine. But this is how this is going to work for me. And so I had stopped at one point and communicated with this person that, because I found myself in the same situation again. And I'm like, what? How am I here again? And I stopped and I said, I am going to have to disengage myself from this because I feel as if I am abating and abetting this type of behavior that we have been in continual, well, I have been in continual conversation with you about. And I feel like I am actually enabling it. And so I'm going to have to step away. So I did. But then a month later in the same situation again. And I'm like, I just talked to them about this. I was very clear. But yet here we are again. And I said, I had to say to myself, how did I end up back here? Because I put different things in place. And I'm like, so I had to walk myself through and be like, okay, what happened? There's some open door here that you keep ending up back here. And then I found out what it was. So what I started doing is there's a beautiful feature on the phone, on cell phones, that where you can actually silence somebody's texts. And I have had my phone on silent vibrate for the past 3 years. Because too much bing, bing, bing. And no. I don't need all of that. When I decide to look at my phone, then it's like, oh, okay, this happened. But then I would see these texts, bing, this. I mean, because my phone vibrates. And I'll be like, zzz, zzz, zzz. And it's like, okay. Mm-mm. So what I decided to do, I silenced her texts. And so I'm like, let me do a little experiment. Because I realize you can do the same thing with phone calls. And it will never ring on your phone. And I'm like, whoa, that is cool. So I'm like, let me check this out. Because I'm like, I need to close the gates. Not close the gates, I need to close the gaps. There are some gaps here that keep happening. And so I'm like, where are the gaps? Because there are some gaps here. You let them in for this one thing, and then they slip in something else, and the something, and you have to also know what your issue, your areas of weakness are, your gaps. My gap is, one of my gaps is I like to help and I like to problem solve. I'm a problem solver, and I love the opportunity to problem solve, and I love the opportunity to put together a plan and a strategy. I'm like, yes, let's do this. Okay, boom, here we go. Get the whiteboard. You know, here's the thing. Like one time the person had a thing, and I'm like, okay, here's going to be the steps. This is what you can do for that. And I wrote it all. I love doing things like that. I'm a project manager at heart. And so I have a weakness there, because then I end up putting myself in things that I don't need to be in. And so I'm like, okay, let me do the same thing with the text. I think sometimes when you work with people that you are also have a not work relationship with, where whether it be friends or acquaintances, whatever, or you talk about personal things, that there can be a cloud there. Not for me, but you know, I think some people may do that. Because to me, business is business, okay? Business is business. That's separate. And so I think that may be a factor. And I think that there are people that need somebody with them to do things. People that have, whether they have autism or some people with ADD, that's one of the things. It's like they can work with somebody right there with them, but if they don't have the motivation to do it on their own, but they will do it with somebody else. And I think all of us may have that in different areas. Some people work better with people with them. I work better the opposite. Then I realize, because there is a business relationship and, you know, a personal relationship there, and I realized that one of the things I didn't like on the business side of it, I realized the way that you all function is actually, y'all have that dynamic of functionality, which you are okay with on that end. I am not okay with that. And I don't flow like that. And then I realize the same with their personality. They flow in certain ways that it's friction for me.
because I don't function that way. I also have had to learn and practice balancing my own needs, because when you are a special needs parent, I have to do and be this continually. And I have had to fight and learn, practice balancing my needs along with that. Because what you'll find with a lot of special needs parents is that they don't have their own life. They don't have their own nothing because they are there for their child. Like, I've heard one person talking about how they hardly get a chance to bathe because, you know, their child. And I'm like, how you don't get no? They have, their child has the same condition, I believe, that my youngest has, who's completely dependent. And I'm like, look, how you mean? You put, you know, they can't sit up on their own, then you have the special chair, or you lay them on the floor and you go bathe. Like, really? I'm like, no. Like, I'll put her on her feed and I'll go bathe. Like, I was in the, and sometimes, you know, she has her little upchucky moments. I don't know what's going on today. Either she's one, she had a lot of air in her stomach, or she's just, it's a day where her tummy is just a little bit nauseous or something. I don't know. But today she's been, usually she's fine. Today she's been, you know, and it's like, okay. So I gave her some antacid. So hopefully that clears that up. But, you know, so I was on the toilet. And, you know, doing my business on the toilet, and then I heard it. And if I don't go and, like, shift her attention, she will completely throw up. So I had to get my behind up off the toilet real quick. One time I was on the toilet, my underwear was down, everything, I had to run out with my underwear is down. So, you know, it's a thing when you're a caregiver. And so it's like, I've had to balance that, because, like, I'm a person, like, I became a parent, like, going on 40. So I've had a life, and I'm fully aware of myself. It's not like I'm in my 20s and became a parent and I didn't know what myself was. I know what myself is, okay? And I have things that I love doing, and I've had to learn to balance that, or fight, not learn, fight to balance that along with the needs of my family. And that's in addition to day-to-day things like cooking and feeding and making sure, you know, the house is decently clean and upkept and laundry and all that. That's all in addition to all that stuff. And I'm a single parent, so all of that's on me. And so I have had to fight to balance that and still do the things that I enjoy. And I don't feel guilty about it. Like, right now I'm doing this recording and they're in there chilling. And then when I'm finished in a moment, then I'll go and start to get everybody situated. It's noon. It's time to get everybody situated to eat at noontime, around noontime. So I'm going to do that, you know, then I have to feed the animals and all that stuff. But I take time for myself because I need that. And so I can't be that for anyone else. And I don't want to. Because the time that it'll take me to be that is time that I need for me. Like, I'm not one of those people that, oh, I'm doing this for this person. I feel, no, honey. That's, I have a whole, you know, 75% of my life that's dedicated to this, the children, the animals, and the household, and everything. And then that 25%, I'm not giving to anyone. That 25% is for me. Last night, I was up until 11 sewing. Because I wanted, you know, I love sewing, and I just restored this machine and I love sewing on it, and I wanted to sew because I wanted to take some time for me because I didn't sew the day before. And so I'm like, sewing is something I love to do. I love creating stuff, and sewing on these machines is so awesome. It's so cool. You know, these machines from the 60s, they're from the 60s. It's like, wow, I love them, and that I fixed it. I'm like, oh my God, I fixed and restored this machine and I'm sewing on it. Oh my God. So I feel so proud about that. And so I was up till 11 something doing that because that was me time. That was time for me and I'm going to take it. And I also realized I had to be less accommodating. I had to learn to be more rigid, because I think sometimes when you say something to people and you're saying it all nice, or you're trying to be nice because you don't want to hurt people's feelings, that they seem to take that as some type of leeway, I have found. So I found being blunt and to the point. This is my normal voice right here. A little bit, because my nose, the pollen is out. Okay, the pollen is out. And so my nose is, it's spring. What I talk about consequences being good for you. If you keep getting flies in your house, that's because you have your door open. So that's what it was like. It's like, okay, what am I doing? And I realized it, and I had to put the screen up and close that. You know, not a complete cut off, but to put that screen up to filter that stuff. And that has been working. But I also have to place distance. I have realized, because you have to listen to what people say through their mouth, and you have to listen to what people say through their actions. And I have long realized that even though people may want to change or say they want to change, or maybe ideally they see something, that's how they want to be, that the work and the back end stuff that goes into that, they are not interested in doing. And so therefore, they're not going to change. But if I'm the type of person where it's like, if I say that I want to change something and I'm after that thing to be to change and to do what I need to do, even if I have to do the root work to, you know, okay, what other things do I need to put in place to support that? I mean, I'm like all deep in like that. Then if I'm around somebody who's not deep in like that, like you can be from a certain neighborhood and you want to get out of that neighborhood and make good for yourself, and you go in, you know, doing your schoolwork and getting, you know, high grades so you can get a scholarship, and somebody else says that they want that, but they're not putting in the work, they're not getting the tutors so that they can get good grades and get a scholarship, but yet they say they want to do it so they can get into college. But then when it comes down to it and both of you graduate, you got the scholarships because you did the work. You got, if you didn't understand something or wasn't good at a subject, you got the tutors. You got tutors as in another student to help you, or you asked the teacher to help you, or you went online and learned it. And, you know, that's what I do. If I don't know something, I go online and research it. That's how I'm about things. But when you see somebody that doesn't put that type of effort, what I'm saying is it's just different. I think TDJ says it. If you want to be an eagle, you can't be, you know, with chickens. There ain't nothing wrong with chickens. Chickens don't fly, though. And if you want to be an eagle soaring above, ain't nothing, you're not better than the chicken, and the chicken not better than you. It's just different. The chicken gonna stay on the ground, and that's gonna be their atmosphere and their level, and they're fine with that. You know, you'll see the chicken be like, oh, I want to be up there with the eagle, you know, and ain't nothing wrong with being a chicken, and ain't nothing wrong with chicken. But if you are wanting to soar, then you can't be hanging around with the chicken, because you have two completely different mentalities. So either you're going to be trying to continue to, you know, encourage the chicken to fly higher, and the chicken is limited. The chicken can't fly because the chicken ain't built to fly like that. The chicken can glide, but the chicken can't fly. So you're going to be trying to get the chicken to fly. Yeah, you come up here, come in here. And so you spend so much time trying to get them to do that instead of focusing on what you're supposed to be doing so you can fly. So instead of you flying up there in the sky, you down here with the chicken. But you have the ability to fly. And if you just leave the chicken, be in the chicken's environment, then you can be in your environment. And it just means you can't really coexist. Or maybe you'll coexist for periods, because the eagle does come down. It don't get food in the air. It has to come down. You know, it hunts rabbits and all. So it has to come down. So the eagle will be on the ground at points in time. And you can, you know, engage and converse there. But then, you know, you back up in the air and they back in their environment. But you can't coexist for long periods of time. You will find yourself in situations with different people. And you may enjoy talking to this person, whatever, to a certain point. But when it goes into deeper conversation, you realize y'all don't got nothing in common. Because you may be talking about stocks, and then they talk to you about, you know, this thing that they bought, and they went here and bought this and bought that, and you all about saving and investing. Those are not cohesive conversations. And I had realized for a long time that the levels of conversations were not cohesive. You just sometimes got to realize, you know what, this cannot coexist. Then you're taking time trying to drag them along with you, and they're good with where they're at. Or
they're not willing to do what it took to get beyond that. You're not better than them. They're not better than you. It's just that it's not cohesive. You're unequally yoked. Unequally yoked doesn't apply to marriage. It applies to friendships and, you know, relationships that have nothing to do with romantics as well. But I really wanted to talk about it because a lot of times we feel like we have to, and it could be people that we're related to, and we may feel like, oh, because we're related, I need to be in this place. I need to stay. No, you don't. You don't. And so sometimes you need to separate from your very own family. That doesn't mean you totally disengage with them. It just means that there has to be a limit to our engagement. Because if you're going to be negative and I'm trying to get over here or get somewhere and you're not going to be encouraging, you're going to be negative about it, you know, then that's not helpful for me. So I need to limit our interaction. And that's okay. And I think a lot of people feel like that's not okay, but it is okay. Because when it comes down to it, you have to live your life for yourself. If you want to live your life and to the potential that you desire to live to, then you have to be fervent and after that thing. And I think a lot of people place the onus on God about it. Well, if God wanted to, no, God partners with us and he puts within us what we need. And we have the Holy Spirit, you know, to help us along, but he has put in us what we need. When it comes to my kids, it's been an experience, because this is not what I imagine parenting to be at all. And it's okay to keep things for yourself. Not everything, but it's okay to separate. You are a parent. If you're a parent, you're a parent, but you're also your own person. And when you have kids, and especially when you have kids with special needs, it's definitely a balance. Talk to you next time.